Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Good evening, Eddie Lenehan here again, and this evening I'd like to talk to you about trades. Cardinal. Now, I had a very humorous, although it needn't have been humorous, experience recently. My dishwasher gave up, and I have a friendly repairman. I have been with him for years, be it for washing machines, dishwashers, well, not so much dishwashers, but because I haven't had one for too long, but other electrical appliances. And it gave up, and I asked him to come out, and after a while he did, because he said he was busy, and I could believe that from him. But eventually he came, and he repaired it. He told me what was wrong. He repaired it. And it lasted one wash when it gave up again. Now, I rang him. And he said he'd be out as soon as he could. It took him 3 weeks. He fixed it. It gave up again after a couple of washes. And he said, I'll have to take it away. I said, take it where you like, as long as you can fix it. He did. But he brought it back, fixed, €100. No, he wasn't robbing me. I have no doubt he wasn't, because he said he had to fit some part or other, and the labour was, we all know what labour costs. But I was satisfied. I turned it on when it was filled, and again, one wash. So I rang him and I explained, and he said he'd be out whenever he could. 4.5 weeks. And by then I said, to hell with this. I had got a new washer. And it was the first thing he noticed when he came in the door, that I had got a new dishwasher. And fair dues to the man. He put his hand in his pocket and he took out the €100 and gave it back to me. And there was no more about it. Now, we settled up. There was no more about that, and The only thing that I want to say is, I was thinking afterwards, what about people putting their children through university at huge expense nowadays, when you know that a primary degree is no good to you, a secondary degree, an M, anything nowadays is no good to you. In order to get a job nowadays, you have to have a doctorate. I know it, because two of my children have doctorates now, and they can only get jobs on short-term contracts. And how much does it cost to get a child that far? Whereas you could get a trade, like this man has, and be so backed up with work that he cannot get enough time to do all the work he has to do. There's surely some message there, is there not? Now, that's what I want to speak about tonight, trades. And the first trade I want to speak about is the trade of the smith. Because in my collecting stories over the last 44 years, the smith I have found, Ungawa, the blacksmith, was the most highly regarded of all. And the reason why was that he made all the tools for the other tradesmen. And the other thing was, it was believed that the blacksmith could put a curse on you. How? He could turn the anvil around on you. That was believed. And if the blacksmith turned the anvil on you, bad for you, very bad for you. But there was a positive side to the forge. It was believed that there was a cure in forge water. Now, that wasn't so stupid maybe as it seems to be, because when you think of all the dousing of horseshoes and other iron that went into the water in the blacksmith's trough of water in order to cool the metal before the smith hammered it out into the shape that he wanted, and heated it in the fire again and cooled it and heated it and cooled it. There was bound to be iron in that water. And iron water, there's a cure in that. Now, the blacksmith, he was a wonderful craftsman to have in your parish, and there were smiths in every parish in Ireland. That had to be, because it was the age of horses. I have here in front of me a book published by Knocknagoshal Parish Council, and it's from 1886. And look at this, regard this. Knocknagoshal isn't a big parish, but in 1886, the trades that were in Knocknagoshal were three blacksmiths, three boot and shoemakers, four coopers, one carpenters, and two stone masons. Isn't that remarkable? Three blacksmiths, four coopers. Now, I'll get to these other trades in due course, but three blacksmiths. And of course, one of the things he did was he banded the wheels for all those horse carts that were going the roads. And outside of some forges today, now there aren't many forges left, but you'll see the ruins of many of them, and you'll see what many other ones have been adapted to. You'll see the circle outside the forge where wheels used to be banded. The metal band that was put on those horse cart wheels, the big old wheels that were on common cars. And why, you'll ask, were so many forges at crossroads on the countryside? And there were. Well, I suppose that was a convenient place. They were near everybody. Now, that doesn't mean that they weren't in villages and towns as well. Oh, God, of course they were. But they were at crossroads as well. Oh, and of course, crossroads, well, I suppose they were near this place and that place and that place and this place. They were at crossroads. That might have something to do with laws in days gone by. I stand, maybe people will tell me that, and if you can tell me that, please contact me. They were great gathering places, of course, forges. Their importance goes back a long, long way, obviously, since the great story of Cúil Éirce takes place in a forge. And that's the story about where Cú Chulainn goes into a forge in great haste, for he's been in a battle and he's broken his sword, and he rushes into the nearest forge because he hears the clanging, clanging, clanging of the smith's hammer, rushes into the forge, throws aside all the people who are in a queue already, and rushes in, "Fix my sword, fix my sword." And of course the smith, who is afraid of nobody, be he Cú Chulainn or Fionn Mac Cúil or anybody else, the smith will take orders from nobody. And he says, "Take your place in the queue." And Cú Chulainn, what can he do? Because if he says anything to the smith, he won't get his sword fixed, and the battle will be over before he can take place. All right," he says, "fix my sword, and I'll tell you the best story that he ever heard." And you know, of course, what the men of Ireland were like that time. A story. All right. The man outside says, fair enough, fix his sword and we'll wait. And the story goes on from there. But, there's a catch. And the catch is, there's a murderous side to the story. And it's the smith, right? There in back forge, who prevents what could have been a murder with his own wife as the one who could have been murdered by none other than Cú Chulainn himself. It's the smith who defuses the whole thing in the process, of course, of fixing Cú Chulainn's sword. And sends Cú Chulainn on his way, bye-bye, back to the battle to kill more of the O'Connors. They're the crowd he's fighting against. Now, there were so many things the smith was great at that time. Not just fixing horse wheels. He used to make field gates, and there are many of those field gates all over the country yet, sometimes with the smith's mark on them. And there were wonderful gates to last, not like the old tubular gates of today. They collapse after a few years, even though they're painted with that old white stuff, aluminiumized stuff or whatever you call it. They don't last, no matter what. But the old gates that the smiths made, they last. Because remember, it was smiths made the railway gates. And by the Lord, those railway level crossing gates, they last forever, those gates. So, wonderful the work of the smith, and very often the smiths themselves, because they're remembered mainly because they had to be big, strong men to do the work that they had to do. Now, the cures that the smith could perform. We have, in our area here, a smith who had a cure, and how he came by the cure was rather peculiar, because back in the bad times, when Irish people were being persecuted, especially priests, the time of the penal laws from roughly 1690 to 1760 thereabouts, when if the local landlord, because all these laws were on the statute books, if the landlord or if the Lord Lieutenant or any of these wanted to be bad enough to put them into action, they could. There was a priest, he came, a poor friar, he came along, and the soldiers were pursuing him. And the poor man was on his last legs, and he came to this forge. And the smith, he was inside shoeing a horse or shoeing an ass or something like this. And the poor friar came in on his last legs, as I say, and the soldiers not far behind. And the poor friar, he was riding some kind of a broken down horse. And the smith, naturally enough, he had pity on him. And the friar, he said, please help me. Naturally enough, the smith took pity on him, as I say, and what did he do? He whipped off the poor horse's shoes and turned them backwards, and off he left the friar and the horse. And when the soldiers came in a short time later, well, he says he went that way. And of course the soldiers saw which way the friar had gone, the opposite direction, as they thought, with the shoes backwards. Off they went after him, and the friar escaped. But before the friar went, he left the smith a cure in thanks, because he was a poor friar, he had no money, and from that day onwards, that family had a cure. Right up to modern times. Right up to modern times. Many, many people used to go to the same family for that cure that the friar left to them. There was funny stories also about smiths. Pulling teeth, for example. I heard from one old man, he told me a hilarious story, how a man from Doolin, how he went to a smith when his teeth were killing him, and there weren't too many dentists in the country that time. And the smith brought him in. Come in, come in. No chair, no fancy anything that time. The smith threw him down in a corner of the forge, put his foot down on his chest, got the pinchers, and he pinched it in his mouth, and he pulled it straight out. And there was a second one to be pulled, and the man was crazy. And the smith, he said, what kind of a baby are you? What kind of a baby? Your man ran out of it, he says. The pain in my teeth, anything would be bearable, except another torture like that. Thank God, he says. He swore to me that it happened. Whether it did or not, I don't know. Anyway, that was the smith. A mighty man to have in your parish. Now, the second one, was obviously the stonemason. On Sir Clicker, because remember, you had to have some place to live. You had to have a roof over your head. And they said that the smith's trade was the one trade that never improved with the passing of time. And of course, the number of castles, the number of abbeys, the number of bridges that still survive from God only knows what. They're sure proof of that. And bridges especially, when you look at the arches of bridges, and you look at the number of bridges that were built for horse traffic only from an age gone by, and when you see the number of articulated trucks and trailers going over those same bridges now that were never built for that traffic, and they still survive, isn't it a wonder? The craftsmen that built those, wonderful entirely. But surely the most famous mason that ever lived was the Gobon Sir. And there are stories and stories and stories told about him and his adventures. I could fill a whole programme about him and the humorous things he did. And his wife, the clever woman she was. One of those stories is about the Gobon Sir and the King of England, and how he was asked to go over, his fame was so great, and build a castle for the King of England. Now, the King of England, he wasn't satisfied with the castle he had. He heard about the Gobon Sir and his fame at building, and he invited him over to build a castle. Now, there was a bit of suspicion. The Gobon Sir's wife said, that lad, I don't like it. But go on, and leave something here after you. Something you'll need. And that's exactly what the Gobon did. He went over anyway, and he drew out the plans for the castle, and he put the workmen over in England working on it. Well, they made great progress, and up and up and up along the walls, and the King of England, he was fascinated, because it was a better castle than the one he had. But when they got up almost to the point of it, he said to the King of England, Oh, we're missing something here. You see that point of it up there? I can't build any further without a special tool I have at home to complete that. I'll have to go home to get it. No. Hold on a minute, no, because the King of England knew very well that if the Gobon went home, he'd never come back. and he might build another castle the like of this one for somebody else, and he only wanted one castle like this. No, he said, I'll send over my son. I'll send over my son and he'll bring it back. Isn't that all right? All right, says the Goban, that's fair enough. And the King of England's son was sent over. But of course, the Goban's wife, she was no fool. And as soon as the King of England's son, the Prince of Wales, I suppose he must be even at that time, arrived and asked for the thing and explained what was wanted for, he had been listening, of course, to the directions. Ah, she knew precisely what to do. And she says, come on upstairs, sonny, I'll show you where it is. It is above in a big box. And she brought him upstairs inside in their own house. And opened the box, and she said, look in there now. And as soon as the prince looked in, she caught him by the legs, tipped him in, and down went the cover, and she turned the key. Ha, she said, that's where you'll stay now until my husband comes home. And immediately she sent a message over to England to the same effect. And of course, the King of England was caught. Her husband, the Goban, had to be sent home. And when he arrived home, they allowed the prince to go home to his father. Very, very courteous and honest people. And of course, the King of England was raging that his castle was never completed. But that's the way I think. Smart people, stonemasons. Now, my next one would have to be the chouinard, the carpenter. Because what good would a castle or any other building be without something to put inside in it, some bit of furniture? The carpenter, of course, he was a great man to make tables and chairs and the old-style dressers. But they weren't the only things he made. He made horse cars, and he made stairs, and he made small house gates, even though now many of these smaller items, farmers, they could make their own. But also, what carpenters used to make was, excuse me, I must have a little drop of this that I'm drinking. They'd make coffins on the side. And of course, that's where a lot of carpenters came into their present business as undertakers, because it was often found that, you see, coffin makers, it's a steady business. It'll always be there. People will always be dying. So often carpenters decided, well, wouldn't it be nice to go into that trade and have the carpentry on the side? And very often then, they invested in the hearse and the horses, the two-horse hearse, a lovely bit of machinery, a lovely bit of equipment it was in its day. And nowadays, of course, you can see that, well, the hearse, there's something stately about them and the way they creep along. And, of course, the carpenter also made horse carts in those days. But horse traps, they weren't made locally. The timber work was too fine. They were expensive. At that time, they were a kind of status symbol. They were even kept in their own shed, just like a car would be kept in a garage today by a lot of people. And they were the car of that time, when there was a kind of a change over from the horse age to the motor car age. They were the kind of transition, the horse trap. They were an essential in every village, in every town. And many, many villages had several of them, because they roofed houses as well. And as I said at the start, what could you do without a carpenter? It was all very fine to put up the stone walls, but There was no comfort in stone walls only. Now, next on my list would be the wheel maker. Sometimes carpenters did this, but the wheel maker was a specialised kind of a job, the rohador, the sair roha. And you see, just like today, the world in years gone by had two ways of travelling on land. It could go on foot or on wheels. So the wheel maker was a vital part of society, and his trade was a very precise one. It'd be no fun to be bumping along on one wheel bigger than the other, the smaller than a big one. You see, you were bumping anyway, probably, since very few of the roads that time were tarred. And let me play you a piece now from a man I recorded 45 years ago in Kerry on this very subject.
Da muss ich den Stock fest und habe es rund, habe es rund in den Nib und habe es bereit lind. Und da habe ich, Chris, da habe ich zum Kind mit Pingmann vermeasuren, was da habe das Box, da habe das Box all rund, da habe ich mich eben. For if they wasn't put in even and straight, when they'd be putting under in then around the verge of the spokes, it wouldn't fit if the spokes weren't in straight. The law for trade in a wheel. Awesome pride for trade. And the fellas above then, do you see the spokes? The spokes aren't going in straight at all, no, they're slanted that way. That way, from the stock up to the rim, and all round that way, out from another. And it did my work to know for to hold that, for to put in the spokes in the rim outside the well, in the band. Now, I'd say there's some more for treading it.
Hello. Now, 45 years ago, I recorded that man. Now, the stock, because it had to be hard, was made of elm, and the spokes would be made of oak, and the fellies, they were the ones out along the rim, they'd be also made of elm, and the tool for shaving the timber, that was a spoke shave. Now, my next trade, I suppose to keep the rain off in those days before most houses were slated, was the thatcher on Theodore. You had a choice. Did you want your house thatched with reeds or with straw? I think most people would have chosen straw for the very, very simple reason that it lasted longer. And the best type of straw was rye reed. It would last roughly 15 years. Now, an old man told me that you had scallop inside or scallop outside. And scallop inside was the best. It looked better, and for practical reasons it was better, because scallop outside, it let the rain in. Because the rain travelled in along the scallop, and, well, you know what the results of that might be in the long run. Who did the thatching in those days? Well, most farmers did their own thatching. Where did the scallops come from? Scallops were easy to get. They could either be hazel, or they could be sallies, osiers. And the thatchers, well, some thatchers set their own sallies for the scallops. But hazels were reasonably easy to come by, and they were great. There was great lasting in them. Now, the next one was the Thaliur. And of course, the Thaliur was also a very, very popular man because, well, did you want to go around naked? Well, that's important too. There were two types of Thaliur. Those with their own establishments and the journeyman tailor. Most stories attached to the journeyman for the very simple reason that he went around from place to place, whereas the man with his own establishment, well, he was fixed. He was there in one place, whereas the journeyman, well, I don't have to explain that one. He saw the country. And the thing about him in the stories that survive was that they tended to be small, weak men. He came in, he sat on the table, and he worked there. You wonder why on the table? Well, he could gather all his traps and accoutrements around him. And there's very, very good stories about the small, weak little man pretending to be a mighty warrior. Junior Crehan, the famous fiddler and the good storyteller too from West Clare, he told me a good one about this tailor. He came in one June day. He had been asked to come to a house to make a suit of clothes, and he came in, ordered up breakfast, and he got it from the farmer's wife. It was a warm morning. She had homemade butter and whatever else he ordered. And while he was eating his breakfast, a swarm of midges gathered around the butter, and he threw a swipe at them and buried a lot of them in the butter. It was soft because of the warm morning that was in it. And he started counting them while he was drinking his tea. The woman was going out doing her jobs around the yard. And he, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and he counted 100 of them. And he got, he said, 100 at one blow. That's fair going for any man. And yes, he got notions. He says, I'll do my job and I'll go about my business. 100 at one blow. And he did. Finished his job and off he went. But where he went was down to the forge, and he says to the blacksmith, make me a sword. And the blacksmith was looking at him, the small little man looking for a sword, and he said, well, what would you want a sword for? Your father? No, said the small man, for myself. I have money. I have. And he rattled his purse. Oh, I don't mind, said the blacksmith. If you want a sword, you'll get it if you can pay for it. And he made a sword, hammered it out. And now, says the tailor, I want you to write on it 100 at one blow. Huh? Write down that on it. All right, says the blacksmith, and he did, and got paid, and off went the small man with the sword dragging behind him. Well, he got tired after a while. The day was warm, and he went in behind the ditch and stuck the sword in the ground beside him. After a while, a gentleman in a coach came by, and his man driving above it in front. And the sunlight caught it and blinded the man above, he said. And the gentleman put out his head out. God, it blinded him too. What's that? He says. I don't know, master. Go in and see. And the man, the driver, got down off of the coach and he looked in over the ditch. And there he saw the tailor asleep and the sword stuck on the ground beside him. And he told the master. Huh? And the master got down and looked. Holy God Almighty, he says. And he woke up the small man. Hey, hey! Huh? Said the tailor. What are you doing there and where did you get that sword? Oh, that's my sword. Do you want to read it? And he held up the sword. 100 at one blow. And on went the story. A mighty funny story, as Junior told it to me. Very funny story, but typical of the small men who turned out to be the great hero and the killer of giants. I'll tell that another night too, if people want to hear it. Next one is the dressmaker. You couldn't leave the women out of this, could you? The gúnadóir, the gown maker. But, strangely, I never came across, in 44 and a half years of collecting, I never came across a story about a gúnadóir, a dressmaker. Why? Maybe in the society of that time, women would go to town to buy their new clothes. Maybe they wouldn't let it be said that they'd lower themselves to getting their clothes made. It was, I think, in the generation before that, when there was more poverty, that their clothes would be made by a dressmaker. Respectability had set in the Victorian age. You went to town. That survived up to very, very recently. Dressmaking, I would think, is probably gone out with 2.5 generations by now. Whereas the tailor making the suit for the funeral or for the wedding or for the respectable generation for the men isn't gone out that long. I had many, many stories about that. Now, the next one is the shoe of the bootmaker, and Gracie. One of the basics, of course. Although you hear many, many stories about people who had no shoes in Ireland, especially the children going to school for all of the summer and any of the fine weather, and no shoes. Their feet got hard, although their toes very much got cut. Their nails got broken, hitting them on, remember, untarred roads, dirt roads with big stones. Their feet must have been fairly cut. But every village had at least a shoemaker or more, as you see there from the Knocknagoshal one, two or three shoemakers. But makers, were they? No. They were shoe repairers. Few of them actually made the shoes or boots from scratch. That was done in factories in bigger towns, as can be seen in any 6-inch ordnance survey map. Go to that and you'll see that there was boot factories. In Tralee, for example, there was several boot factories. And the same would have been true of any town in Ireland. There was boot factories. But you have boot repairers. You'll have shoe repairers, shoe makers. I remember well in my father's workshop, even though he was a harness maker, there was always a pile of shoes to be half sold and tipped, you know, metal tips to be put on the heels of them, because even today you can watch people's feet and you see the way some people go in and some people go out. And there was always a heap of these shoes to be sold or half sold, and boots to have their hobnails replaced, and more. People were walking in those days. I still have his last, and his various hammers, and his tack riser, etc. And I wish I could use them with the skill he did, but what'd be the point? Who'd bother repairing shoes nowadays when they could wear out? When they could buy cheap new ones. Nobody does that kind of thing anymore. People just throw them away. Good night, and thank you for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.